Some people can really do well with all of their eggs in one basket. I am not one of those people. It makes me extremely stressed out. And what I mean by all of your eggs in one basket is a salaried role with one company. When you sign on, even just the language of "I work full time with this company" to me implies that like that company like owns all of your time somehow. I don't really get that. And honestly, it's so ironic to me that for most people who don't want to go into consulting, they don't go into it because they feel like there's less stability. But I think what we're seeing right now, especially with so many layoffs in a downturning economy, is that that stability is a mirage.
Hey, welcome to Beginner Maps, where we showcase stories of scary career pivots, so that you get the courage, path, and role models to carve out a career that you love.
Today, we have Bree Lever with us. Bree is the founder of Ember Consulting, where she helps companies as their brand community strategist, working to create a community out of their super fans. Bree, I am super excited to be talking to you today and talk about all things community consulting.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Great. I want to start with something we discussed in our last call, which is that you actually didn't plan to start consulting, but it happened when you quit your job in February of 2020 without having a backup job or anything. Tell us about that decision. Was it scary?
Yeah, gosh. I will say it was scarier to stay. I was...
Why is that?
I had been working for this company for 7 years and love them, have nothing but good things to say about them. And I didn't have this language at the time, but I have a generalist skill set. So I was like the perfect person to get this basically ambassador community launched off the ground and to grow it in the beginning stages. As the company grew, and I managed more people, they were continually wanting to put me in a more specialized role, very understandably. But I didn't have this awareness at the time of like that this is what was happening, but I couldn't visualize what a specialized role would look like for me or what would bring me life or like what that next stage would be. So it was a really tough decision that took me almost a year. But ultimately I admire the ones who can do this, who can be looking for a full-time job while they have a full-time job. Like to me, that's like the hardest possible thing you can do. And so I knew I needed to leave before I could like separate, like, unmesh myself from the company long enough in order to reflect on where I wanted to go next. So I fully thought I was going to have and just find a new full-time role. I started networking and yeah, just like you said, it sort of unfolded through over the course of 100 coffee dates that I had that I actually went into consulting. So I don't know if that answers you. I can't remember what your original question was.
Yeah, my original question was it scary for you? And you said that it was scary to stay. And I want to dive into and double click on what you said about them wanting to put you in more specialized role. What do you recall? What were those specialized roles that you were being offered at that time?
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, they were like, what role do you want? We'll create it for you, which was really, really, super generous. So we were kind of thinking like, there was some question around, do I move into more of a specialized role with our leaders, our ambassadors who have become leaders in the community and kind of move into more of a role where I'm in closer relationship with them and also like coaching them, rather than the field, what we called the field at large. There were also, I could have pivoted more into like internal management and managed a team internally that was serving these ambassadors. Or I could have moved into like more of a sales training role and like sales and recruiting training. So there were a lot of different options, and they were kind of like, tell us where your sweet spot is and we'll hire for whatever else we need. And I was like, that's great. But I didn't know how to continue doing what you're doing. Yeah. I really thrive in that early stage scrappy. You kind of need, like, I have strong relationship skills that I also love dabbling in data. I also love bringing creativity to the table. So I just needed something that was going to kind of require all of those skills. I have to hit those essentially 6 different skill sets in a day in order to feel like I'm thriving. So that's, I didn't know it at the time, but now looking back, that's what was happening.
Wouldn't it be like a promotion if you took one of these specialized roles and come with more compensation?
Yeah, I mean, I think like titles are somewhat made up. So it was sort of always my job to launch the program, grow the program. Like I was 100% accountable for the program, which became 90% of the company's sales and growth. So it sort of always just was that way. It was just sort of formally recognizing, like taking some of those responsibilities off of my plate, to be honest, and moving me more into the specialty that of choice, which I could not choose. So.
Okay. This is fascinating. So tell me, what did you do next? So you are here, you are in February of 2020, COVID has just like starting to take place. Did you get scared about the hiring environment and how it's going to change while you were looking for a job?
You know, yes and no. So I, in March of 2020, I finished my job. I actually, the last thing I did with the company was did a trip with them to Uganda where we had our production team. And so I took 2 weeks off and traveled Europe on my way back, made it back like 3 days before the like international shutdown. And then I actually got accidentally quarantined on my family farm with my parents. I like accidentally was exposed to COVID. It was this whole thing. So me and my siblings were like all stranded at home. And we ended up staying there for 3 months. And so I actually, normally I live by myself. I was living in Portland at the time. So it was actually such a gift to be surrounded by people in the midst of the lockdown and such a supportive group, like my family. I never felt scared, but I definitely felt a fire under my ass because I was like, I have 3 months of savings that and there is a very real deadline at the end of that. So, and I was like, and I do not want to keep living. I'm here with the family right now in COVID. That's great. That's fine. But I really don't want to stay here longer than I need to. So I don't know. Things were so up in the air at that point. There were some days that were like so discouraging with COVID. You're like, is anyone ever going to hire because everything is up in the air? But then there were also some like really creative, like I feel like people were starting so many new different initiatives and companies also right when COVID hit. And some people were really taking advantage of like the shakeup. So I never felt like fully panicked, but I think that's partly because I had a great support system. And I also just like, I really maintained a hopeful mentality. Like there is work out there. It's just a matter of putting myself out there enough times that I get exposed to the work that could be a good fit for me.
Okay. Tell me about this. You did something really interesting to find and discover your next job. What was that process and how did you come up with it?
Yeah. So I recommend this book for anyone who is like, if you just quit or you've been laid off or are going through any sort of life change. There's a book called Designing Your Life. It sounds a little cheesy, but it is truly remarkable. And every person I have recommended it to has told me that they have had really significant insights come from it. It truly, I would say, like gave me permission to move into a space where I started my own business and helped break down some of the fundamental beliefs that I had about my career journey. So in this book, there's like so many nuggets I could pull from that. But one of the biggest takeaways that I got was they said, I don't know, whatever the crazy statistic is, like only 30% of jobs actually ever get posted online because
that's unbelievable.
I don't quote me on that, but it's something like absurd when you like look at the number. And so their whole point was like, you don't get a job by applying for jobs. That's just not how it works. Sadly, wish it was more like that there, but that is few and far in between people who actually get jobs that way. What you need to do is start talking to people who are in the career journey and in the career path that you want to pursue. And you need to ask them to coffee and you need to keep doing that 100 times. So they basically I don't think they ever explicitly stated this, but there was sort of this unspoken, like, if you have 100 coffees, you'll find your dream job. Like statistically, if you meet with 100 people, we'll like loosely guarantee that you'll find your next best job in your career path. And so I just sort of took that very literally. And I was like, well, I've got 90 days of savings. So I was like, I'm going to do 100 coffees, 100 Zoom coffees, just 30 minutes each. Well, 30 minutes to an hour, it depended. I'm going to do 100 over the next 90 days. And that was the single most impactful thing I have ever done for my career journey in general. And it's the reason that I landed on consulting. And it's the reason that I had clientele for my first year and a half of my work.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. So what you're saying is so simple, but it's unbelievable that you not only discovered community consulting, but you got your clientele for the first year and a half of consulting. How many clients was it?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. So I started with 4. One at a time, but I think I got my first client in May of 2020. May of 2020. And then I think by July I had 4 clients. And then, so I had between 3 and 4 clients for that first year and a half. And some of those clients would be on for like, some of them were on for like a year long contract. Some of them were on just for like 4 months. So it varied, but so I don't remember what the total number would be, probably around like 7 or so, I think, by within that first year and a half. Yeah.
That's amazing. So 7 clients from 100. Were they all from those first 100 coffee chats?
Yeah, they were. That was like, it was seriously like the thing that kickstarted everything, because I just started with the list of people that I knew who would be interested, who like one cared for me. Number two, like would be interested in helping me progress. Cause I mean, when I first started having the coffee chats, I didn't know what I was asking them for. It was more like, I'm not sure what my next step is. I'm looking for full-time jobs. I'd love to hear about your career journey and share a little bit about what I'm thinking. And I'd love to just get your reflections. And then at the end of each call, I would ask, after hearing me share, is there anyone who you think would be interesting for me to talk to? And as those calls progressed, it went from, I don't really know what I want to do, can I hear about your experience, to I have this idea for how I want to serve businesses and do what I've done before for another company, but do it in a consulting role. Can I tell you about it? And you can reflect back to me like what you heard and help me with my pitch and even tell me if there's someone who comes to mind who you think would be a good fit for this. So it really evolved over time, but it was quite impactful.
Do you remember how you got your first client from one of these chats?
Yeah, I do. So it was my friend, one of my closest friends, Adrian, connected me with her friend from a company she used to work for, Tabitha, who connected me with her friend Desiree, who is starting this apparel company called Pop Linen. So, and that's how all of my clients that I actually got ended up. They were like, they weren't in my first degree circle, but they were like 2 or 3 degrees removed. And so it really goes to show the power. It's so awkward to ask at the end, like, is there anyone else you think I should talk to? And that's even like, that's not even like the best, I think there's better ways that you can craft that, and more specific ways you can ask for referrals to talk to new people. But, in my like scaredy cat place, that's like a good place for me to start. constantly refining my process. Yeah, it's, it always improve the process, but that's at least where I had to start. And it's so awkward to like then just shut up and not say anything and let them like sit in that tension. But that's truly where the magic happens. And that's where people, like when they really have time to sit and think about it with you on the call, at least one name will come to mind, usually.
Love this. How did you actually discover that consulting was the path that you should take?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there was one company specifically that I was like honed in on, and I really wanted to work with them. I had like applied for a different job that like wasn't a great fit with them, but I got connected to their like marketing director. And so we had had coffee several times. I was sort of explaining to her what I had built at my previous job, and she was like super intrigued by it. We stayed in touch. And as I was having more conversations with brands who were like impressed with the community that I built, I kept circling back with her. And she was the first one who I created a deck for her. I was like, okay, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to say that your community or your company needs a community for your super fan customers. I'm just going to pitch you on it. And I have been like revisiting with this person. They never became a client. They are still not a client. We're still in touch, and I'm still telling them. I have like so many contacts at this company, but nobody has. I'm like, if you ever build a company and you decide not to work with me, I am going to take that so personally. But no, they're a great company, and they are so infused with community. They just have never like formally centralized it. So that was like the first step that I took to create like a deck.
Okay. This is super cool. And, I want to leave the listeners with the repeatable playbook that they can take for these 100 coffee chats that can give them their first set of clientele. Do you think, first of all, like, do you think this is repeatable for other people too?
100%. This is like, it's like the most numbers game thing there ever was. It's like literally just get on the phone with 100 people. I don't even care if you have to repeat some people. That's what I did. I like came to a dead end at 70 people. I came to a dead end, and I literally went back to like my top 10. And I was like, this is so embarrassing. But like, will you please talk to me again? Because I've like hit a dead end. And they were like so kind and so generous and did so. And actually like literally one of my clients came out of a second call with someone. And on the second call, they were like, actually, I think there's someone you should talk to. And I was like, I knew there was a reason for all Oh, it's just so, it's not easy, but it literally is a numbers game. So I mean, I would be so bold to say, if you are like willing to have 100 coffee chats with people I wouldn't spread it out over like the course of a year. Like I would keep a pretty compact timeline on it, because you want to like take advantage of that energy and momentum that you get from it. But if you're willing to do that, I will hands down say you will find the next role that you're looking for, whether it's a full-time job or clients for your consulting. Like there's not a single thing that I would do that has a bigger impact on that next step.
Okay. And how would I even start? So these 70 people that you had, first thing I'm thinking is that I probably don't even have 70 people. Do you, cold reach out to strangers from LinkedIn?
I did do that. So I would say you probably don't know 70 people, but you probably do know 40 people. So sit down during the 3 months. So the very beginning of the process, I sat down, I wrote down 40 people that I know. I revisited that list at least one other time and like sat back down and said like, okay, add 20 more people to this list, and like went into all of my past emails, literally was like scrolling through my Facebook, scrolling through like anyone who could have any tangential connection to my career and like professional life. Mentors are a great group of people to like connect with during this time. So you probably know at least 40. That's the best place to start. Number one. Number two, at the end of every call, asking, like, I'm looking to connect with more people. Do you have like 1 to 3 people who would be interested in talking with me, or who you think would be interesting for me to talk to, however you want to frame it? That's critical, because that's going to give you, that's number one, like that's actually where your clients and your opportunities lie, is like in the second and third degrees removed. And it's going to grow your list, right? So rather than like you having to like come back to your list and like scrounge and think about like, who else do I possibly know? It's like that's going to be the natural mechanism that gets you to 100. And then finally, I was just throwing like spaghetti at the wall and seeing what stuck. So I was doing cold LinkedIn reach outs, and, you know, it was surprisingly successful. I would say for every like 10 people that I reached out to, one got back to me, and would agree to get on the phone with me, which was awesome. Out of like probably 100 cold messages that I sent, I did get one client. So
okay.
it is not like, the odds are, it's so much harder, and I would not recommend focusing your time and energy in that space. But I did get one client. So I will say it works. I would not recommend focusing the majority of your energy there. I would focus it more on the warm leads, which are people who you're actually connected to. And then the final, like really practical piece here is like, I have what I call the follow-up funnel, which no one ever escapes. So once you are like on the phone with me, if there's like a call to action or like, you know, could you connect me with somebody else, I will follow up with that person for 4 times before I kind of go radio silent. And that doesn't mean that I follow up and then I'm the next day I'm like, hey, did you get that last email? And then the next day I'm like, hey, did you get that last? That's not what I mean by follow up. So what I mean by follow up is I send a follow up email that's like, thanks so much for sharing some time. Here's a recap of like what I'm looking for. Here's a recap of like how I might be able to help you, whatever needs to go in there. I follow up a week later. If there is no response, I follow up a month later saying, hey, like, doesn't seem like this is a good season. If you don't mind, I'd love to reach out next quarter to see if things have changed for you, or some modified version of that. So I have like an Asana project with all the people that I've had coffee with. And when I have a new coffee, I add a new task, and it has 4 subtasks for like follow up on this date, follow up on that date. So it's very manual. It's a lot of work, but so one of my clients, I was following up with them for over a year before they signed on with me. Like, and that was the cold LinkedIn reach out. So it takes, but the mind games you can play with yourself, because you're like, oh, I'm bothering them, or oh, I'm like, I'm being too spammy. But I really always tried to focus on like, I am trying to serve these people. And if I can help them by being the one, instead of them having to remember that I exist, if I can help them by prompting them, like that's a win for them and that's a win for me. So I really had to tell myself that, but it really works in the end. It's like pretty formulaic, but it really does work.
This is amazing. I'm sure this will be so helpful for our listeners, because this is incredibly helpful for me. I'm going to follow up and reach out to so many of my contacts, like after this call.
Good.
I'm going to get on this 100 coffee chats game.
Yeah. Well, especially for the podcast too, like, or I don't know how many other like things you're reaching out about, but especially for people launching podcasts, like any initiative that you're launching, like, yes, the phone with 100 people is pretty transformational.
Mm-hmm. Love this. Okay. Now I want to take a little segue here and talk about your consulting business. Tell me, who is your ideal client?
Yeah, great question. So my ideal client is a marketing-led or product-led brand that wants to become more community-led. So usually they have a strong relationship with their customer. They might have, you might see that relationship through their like social media or their email marketing, but they have not taken the step to start connecting those customers to each other. There's a lot of different, I've built a lot of different types of communities, but I would say I have a really strong marketing and sales background. So I tend to work well with brands that want their community to have some element or want one of their goals for the community to be new customer acquisition. I would say that the strength of any community is that we are leveraging your essentially top repeat customers, and we're combining them and connecting them in a community. But not all communities are good at serving the goal of new customer acquisition. But that's one that I've tended to specialize in the past. And usually the main thing with when I partner with a client, the main deliverable is that we craft and design a centralized space where that community can gather. We focus on how that community is served through events, conversation, and content. So that's who I tend to try to look for.
Okay. It is people who have a strong user base, but they haven't connected them to each other. And your deliverable is that you help them have a community, like start their community. So they have a central community space. And where does this community live typically?
Yeah, it really depends. It depends on how many customers the client has, what their community experience has looked like in the past. But if we're just starting out and this is like the first community initiative, I tend to build in all-in-one platforms that are so there's like kind of two tiers of these all-in-one platforms. They're traditionally used by creators, but a lot of brands are starting to use them, like Circle, Heartbeat, Mighty Networks even. And then there's like the enterprise level of those all-in-one platforms, like HireLogix, Vanilla, Insighted, Koros. So I tend to work because this is like the first community initiative. Usually we're not building in like these massive platforms that have really high budgets. We're just trying to test this hypothesis that a community is a good program for the brand. So I'm usually building in some of those, the platforms like Heartbeat and Circle. I don't like Mighty Networks, but if someone like really twisted my arm, I guess I would build it on there.
Okay. Okay. This sounds all good. And you said that your specialization is in sales and marketing. And so you help with customer acquisition. Like the goal, one of the primary goals of the community is customer acquisition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. What specifically do you think people don't know about how they can use a community to acquire more customers for their business?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. One, I think people overthink it and they don't give their customers, like your customers, especially your like super fan customers, are already talking about you. So let's make it easier for them to do that. And the best way to make something easier is to use like basic habit formation principles. So considering if the action that you want someone to take is refer a new customer, you have to ask if that's the approved action is what I call it. How are we prompting them to take that action? And what is the reward or incentive for that action? It's actually really simple. And what I love about the community space is that you now, when you have a community in place, you now have a centralized location where you can communicate with this group of people. So now you have a place where that prompt and those rewards and incentives can exist really, really naturally. So honestly, I think a lot of people overthink it and they divorce their like affiliate program from the rest of their like super fan customers, because they think like traditional affiliate programs are not targeting your super fans. They're targeting like affiliates, like people who just want to make money off of like a million affiliate links in different marketplaces. And I actually don't abide by that strategy. I think your best affiliates are actually going to be your super fans, and they're the ones living in your community who are the most engaged. Now there's some like, the journeys can fork within the community. You might have a super fan who like thrives as an affiliate, but isn't like as engaged in the community. Or you might have someone who like hosts events in your community, but isn't interested in being an affiliate. So I think you need to recognize the different user journeys, but I would not divorce the experiences from each other. I would actually keep them all in the same centralized community space.
Love this. This is basically having your affiliate program, but not being like, hey, please refer my product 100 times over email or something like crazy like that. But it's naturally in a place where those super fans visit and like to visit. So it reminds
them. Totally. Yeah. And, you know, equip them with how to talk about your product or your service. So like in your community, when you are creating an announcement for new product updates, you can say at the end of your announcement, like, hey, and for anyone who is an affiliate, or like, please come up with a better title than affiliate, but like, whatever you call them, like, hey, if you're sharing with your friends and family, here's a TLDR on how to share about this product update for anyone who's interested in like coming on as a new customer, like fill in the blanks for your own brand. But there's just so much more. It's such a natural extension, and it's so referrals and incentivizing referrals is so cross-functional with your community initiative.
This is great. Now I want to talk about why is consulting and in general diversifying your income so important for you? Because I was just checking out the article that you wrote recently where you mentioned your other business, renting camper vans in Hawaii. So you're like diversifying your income with consulting, and then you're further diversifying that income as well. So why is the idea of diversification of income so important for you?
Oh, yes. This is like one of my favorite soapboxes. I'll start with like diversification within my Ember consulting business. So some people can really do well with all of their eggs in one basket. I am not one of those people. It makes me extremely stressed out. And what I mean by all of your eggs in one basket is a salaried role with one company. When you sign on, even just the language of I work full time with this company, to me implies that like that company like owns all of your time somehow. I don't really get that. But you're essentially saying like, it's not even all of your eggs in one basket. You're like, this is the golden goose that is going to provide for me. And I'm going to like work really hard and serve the golden goose, but like it will take care of me. And honestly, it's so ironic to me that for most people who don't want to go into consulting, they don't go into it because they feel like there's less stability. But I think what we're seeing right now, especially with so many layoffs in a downturning economy, is that stability is a mirage, number one, because there are so many things that can happen at your company that are completely outside of your control that have massive implications on your like full-time income. So I just am very skeptical and like, maybe it's just because I have trust issues and control issues. I think that's really what this is all getting at. And I didn't realize this when I went into consulting, but over time it's unfolded. And I thrive knowing like, I don't need this one client. So if there are relational issues, if there's like team dynamics that I'm not okay with, if I'm like not being paid what I now feel like the value of my work is, I'm not stuck. And I can say, you know, this client is only worth a third or a fourth of my income this month. It's not a make or break or do or die situation. And so because I have 3 to 4 clients, I have more eggs in different baskets. And to me, it feels like I have more power in that dynamic. I just, for some reason, I really, really struggle with feeling like my full-time employer has like way too much power over my life, to be honest. Some people don't feel that way. Some people like really can thrive in that relationship and find great fits. But for me, I needed that diversification to feel more confident in that dynamic.
Go ahead.
Oh, so, well, I wanted to get to the second part of your question. So that's like the first diversification. The second was, so at the beginning, let's see, that would have been 2021, May of 2021, I had the idea to start a like camper van rental business on the side here in Hawaii. Poured all my life savings into a Ram ProMaster cargo van that I like built out myself with IKEA furniture and like, or cabinets. Wow. Oh gosh, it was the hardest thing I've ever done. We'll never do it again, but it was a really great experience. I love my work with community building. I feel more stable knowing that I have several clients, but there's still just the reality of when you're working in consulting and feast and famine and what's the industry doing. And I believe really strongly that there's always work available. It's just a matter of me finding it. But I wanted to take a little bit of that pressure off, and especially living in Hawaii that has such a high cost of living. I didn't see a great pathway where as a single woman, I'd be able to buy a home eventually. So, So I decided to create a camper van side hustle business. And for me, it's really been so relieving. It's a lot more work, but it's really relieving that I do have these two really significantly different levers in my business and in my income stream that if one isn't firing on all cylinders, the chances of the other one like also tanking are pretty low. So now I can manage both of them. And I feel like, even though in some ways you spread yourself thinner with more diversification, I feel like there's also a level of stability that I gain from that.
That makes a lot of sense. Now I want to talk about some of the difficult parts of consulting. So one of the key challenges with being on your own is that you now have to bring business and you now have to be the marketer as well as the person who does things. So how do you market and get new clients today?
Yeah. Well, this is my generalist skill set that I love. I'm like, ooh, I get to work on all the different parts of it. I will say I outsourced the bookkeeping work. I did not need to keep doing that. So the generalist in me didn't need to keep doing my books, but how I market myself. So I have a couple different things that I do. One, I'm always looking to connect with people. Like anyone who reaches out and is like, wants to hear about my journey or my experience, or just like wants to pick my brain on community things. I'll always hop in at least one call, like completely for free with people. Some consultants have the like charge for, you know, even a like discovery call, but I'm always willing to kind of connect and network in that way. If people are coming to me to talk to me, I'm like, great, let's talk. That's number one. Over the last year, I've become much more in tune with the community world and the places where people are coming to learn how to create a community-led organization. So places like Community Club or CMX, at most like all-in-one platforms tend to have a community of community builders. And so now it's like there's sort of these like familiar names and faces in the circles that are in the community world that I've established some level of authority with my work. And so when work comes their way and they know someone who's looking for a consultant, they can refer on to me. So I'm open to referrals, But I'm also always looking for ways that I can give referrals. And that's actually one of my like core metrics for my business is not like, I can't control who is going to refer me business. I can control who I am referring business to. So I have a whole group of other community consultants who it would be really easy to see them as my competition. And I decided like, actually, these are my people and I'm going to make them my community. So we actually meet up in a mastermind every other week. And one of the components of this mastermind is like understanding each person's niche in the industry. And when something comes my way, that's not a great fit for me, I can refer it to somebody else. So that's one of the things I focus on. And then finally, I do a lot of like content and writing. So I just have a rhythm where I post daily on LinkedIn. I write a blog post weekly. I send a newsletter monthly. And then I also have a new video series that I just launched in a podcast. So.
No, oh my God.
I need to simplify. This is my year of like simplifying, but for now.
Okay. That is a lot of things. You are a one person company doing everything.
Well, trying to more and more trying to not do everything, but just trying to find the things that really do have an impact on my business. And I think I'm still a little bit in that experimentation of like, what are the things that when I put 10 calories into them, I'm going to get 100 back. And I wouldn't say I've fully proven which of those pieces is going to benefit me the most and kind of create the most awareness. So still experimenting, but for now, those are the things that I'm experimenting with.
Apart from all of these marketing initiatives, you mentioned that you have 3 to 4 clients at a time. How many hours per week does it take for you to serve each client?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't track it and I don't know. partly because I decided really early on that I was not going to do hourly work. And part of that is because I don't want to be incentivized to work longer hours. Like I don't want the direct incentive between what I'm making to be, if I take a little bit longer at this work, I'll get more money. Like that's just, I don't want to set up that incentive system for myself. So I do all of my work based on deliverables. So I say, here's a set list of 7 deliverables. Here's the value of this project and my corresponding pricing. It's also like if I'm building a company that has the potential to make millions of dollars for a company, I'm going to charge differently for that project rather than if I'm building a community that's going to bring in $1,000 or whatever the case may be. So I charge based on the value of the project that I'm building. And that's, so I don't actually, I couldn't really tell you, to be honest. It ranges, but I just don't really think about it that way.
Okay. And this is also something that I myself struggled with. And I know that a lot of other new consultants struggle with, which is how to price your clients and how to price your projects. How did you price your first project? And then how have you refined your pricing since then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I really don't feel like I'm the best person to ask with this, but I'll tell you what I did. I don't know that I can speak from a place of authority on this. So I never did my hourly pricing. I do now have like a 1-hour consulting call with like a price on it. So I guess you could say that's like my hourly rate, but that's like, those are just super one-off. I really just broke it down with like, so it's almost 3 years ago now. What did I need to make monthly? How many clients did I think I could handle at a time? And then just like divided the numbers and went to like the bare minimum of like, what would like just bare minimum to survive? Like what would I need? because for me, it was, some people are just like, just raise your prices. But what needs to happen for me is I have to feel really confident in what I'm delivering. And some of that is working on my own mindset, But some of that is like, I had to start at a lower price point in order to gain the confidence of like, I know at the end of the day with each client, I want to feel like I delivered above and beyond the value that they paid me for. And that was really important to me. So I started with really low monthly pricing. I also, the longer contract that they would sign with me, the better the monthly rate I gave them. And so my first, like clients usually work with me for 4 to 9 months. My like bigger brand clients, I do have like some creator clients who do like 4 to 6 week projects. Now, the main thing that was important for me was even if I started with lower pricing, I told myself I have to raise my prices after every project. And the reason that I felt really confident doing that was at the end of each project, I have grown and learned substantially from that experience. And so the next project that I build, I'm bringing even more value to the table. So for me, it was a matter of, it was more important that I grow in my own confidence than it was to make a ton of money right up front. I was willing. I was like, I know I'm not going to be making as much in the beginning, but that's okay. Cause I want to feel really confident. If I don't feel confident in what I'm providing you or that I'm providing you the value, like I don't do as good of work. Like I feel insecure. I feel nervous. I feel anxious. And so I was like, I don't want to feel that way. I want to feel like I'm delivering above and beyond. So that's the mind tricks that I played with myself. I don't recommend it for everyone, but I will say my, from my first project to now, my prices have increased 5x.
So oh, wow.
I'm
so you've basically given yourself a raise of 500% over the past 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. And yeah. And that goes to show how much control you have as on your income as consultant.
Exactly. And you're your own greatest limitation, and especially when you're a consultant and a solopreneur. So to me, it's like, I recognize that I have to play some mind tricks with myself. If you're really good at playing those mind tricks with yourself, maybe you can get there sooner, but that was the journey I had to take.
Mm-hmm. Love this. Okay. This has been really, really helpful. Now I want to go into another segment where I want to talk about the things that you're doing today to network and to grow as a professional. You do some really interesting things for networking with other people. Tell us about some of the projects that you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I love creating collaborative resources. I created my first one last year. I think it's such a phenomenal way to get to partner with other community professionals and get to learn their style and their skill set. So whether they're like full-time or consultants, I love collaborating with other community professionals. I think it enhances the work that we're creating. It makes me better at my job. And relationally, it's amazing to get to connect with people on that level. So my goal is to do like create one sort of collaborative resource a quarter. It's a lot of work. I see why like people don't do it, because it is like, it's herding cats. I mean, you know exactly how it is. So, I try to do one a quarter. And then the other thing that I just started in this last holiday season, that has been going really well and has gotten a lot of great feedback from the community is, I started a series called Community Dissection, and we essentially pick a new community every week that we dissect. So we talk about like, what do we love about this community? What's missing from this community? What could be confused or improved? It's like a little bit of a, I'll call it a honey roast. Like it's not a full roast, but it's like a gentle roast of that community. So I co-host that with, Derek Chu, and we bring on 1 to 2 guests every session. So it's an amazing opportunity to connect with other community professionals, like understand how they see community. You learn a lot about like how someone thinks about community when they're assessing one. And it's a great, it's honestly, it's like a free consultation or like audit for these communities. I mean, I think it's awesome. I hope they think it's awesome, but I'm like, I mean, I'm sure it's always hard to get feedback on your like baby. So yeah. We always try to be gentle, but also truthful about what we see. So that's been really fun to get to collaborate with other professionals, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback on it so far. So I think that's one I'm excited to continue in this future year.
Love this. And, yeah, this is apart from the masterminds group that you mentioned a bit earlier with other consultants, community consultants.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you for circling back. I almost forgot about that. So this was like more out of just a place of my own professional growth. I wanted to do it alongside of other people who I knew were experiencing the same challenges. And I connected with Victoria Cumberbatch, who is an amazing, phenomenal community consultant. We just completely hit it off. We started meeting monthly. I gained so much from our calls that we were like, we should invite other community consultants into this because we're in this together. Like we're really going to be so much stronger when we do this together. So we started with, it's really event-based. We do have a community space that we house on Heartbeat. We kicked it off last quarter, and then we have a new season kicking off this quarter. So, and from that, Victoria and I decided to also create our own podcast because we just think that we're hilarious and we think that other people should listen to us.
You are hilarious. I'm going to listen to the podcast for sure. This is super cool. So would you say that this is one of the ways that you deal with the loneliness that comes with being a solopreneur? Because mm-hmm. that is one of the most common challenges that I hear from mm-hmm. other consultants, is that you feel like you're not a part of a team, and that can be a bit lonely.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a couple things that I do. I have a very high sense of self-agency, which is good and bad. But the good part of that is when I experience something like loneliness in my business, I'm like, well, there's only one person to blame for this, and it's me. So if I want a different outcome, I can do something different, or I can keep doing what I've been doing and blame everybody else for my problems. So when I'm feeling lonely, or I'm feeling like I don't have enough business, or like I'm not connecting with enough people, or I'm not popular enough, I'm like, go do something about it. If you feel like you're not connecting with people, then like reach out and start connecting. So anyways, that's my little self like pep talk that I have, my internal monologue. It can backfire, don't get me wrong, but usually it leads me in a fairly positive direction. So the what we call the mastermind, we call it our coven. And so that has been a really amazing antidote to the loneliness of working in community consulting. I highly recommend, if you feel, if just speaking to the consultants out there, if you go on LinkedIn or wherever, whatever platform or marketplace you're in, and you see other consultants crushing it, and that makes you feel insecure, reach out to that person. Like run at the knives. Like if being surrounded by those people makes you feel like you're less, like actually move towards it and do some work to understand like, what is this bringing up in me, and how, instead of like running from this and hiding from it and like shielding myself from it, how can I move towards it to make my work even better? It's not easy, but it's incredibly rewarding. It will be painful in the beginning, but that will ultimately make your work so much better. And it will give you the confidence that you need over time to start to see yourself in that light and not like, here's the thing. When you move towards those people, you actually realize they don't have all their shit together. You realize like, oh yeah, we're all portraying like the most positive, like spotlighted version of ourselves on these platforms. When you actually move towards people, you start to see some of the things behind the curtain, and it humanizes them. It it relates, you get to relate in your own struggles to them. And in the ways that they are properly crushing it, you, your work gets better because you have more exposure to it. So that's one thing. I also use a co-working app called Groove. It's amazing for solopreneurs. You can hop on for like 50-minute intervals where you co-work alongside other people. I actually had like a new client come on from just grooving together. So it like inadvertently is like networking, even though it's like real long lead networking. Cause it's like, you're not actually really networking, but somehow you are, I don't know. It's magic. I love it. Groove. Look it up.
Yeah. We actually had Taylor, who's the community.
Oh, I love Taylor. She's an amazing community manager.
Love it. So feels like everybody in the community space knows each other. You know, Taylor, who we had as a guest, and then you're doing this YouTube series with Derek, who we're going to have next on as a guest. So
amazing. Yeah, it's a small community world for sure.
For sure. Okay, this has been fantastic chatting with you. I'm going to pass the mic on to Piyush, who has prepared a set of rapid fire questions for us. Piyush, on to you.
Hey, Brie. I've been loving this conversation. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Okay, so in this rapid fire round, I'm going to ask you a few questions which I've prepared. They're going to be short and I won't be asking any follow-up. So first question, what's a fun fact about you that is not covered on your LinkedIn profile?
I come from an Amish heritage. My grandpa was Amish and he left the church and moved to Peru, where my mom was born and raised.
How do you motivate yourself when you feel stuck?
Ooh. Oh man, it's rapid fire. I don't know, take a nap or go get a snack.
Think back to who you were 5 years ago. What do you think that version of you would be most proud of who you are today?
That I'm like a badass woman living in Hawaii running two businesses.
What's the next big thing that you're trying to achieve in your career?
Ultimate empire building. No, I'm just kidding. I actually want to host more consistent workshops. So I want to kind of create a little bit of a fervor around my own workshops.
And last question, what advice would you give to someone who's starting their first community job tomorrow?
Don't give any recommendations on what you would change until you've been there for 3 months. It will make you more friends at your new company, and it will refine some of your bright and brilliant ideas that you have. After 3 months, you'll be able to reflect on them in a way that makes your ideas even better.
Awesome. This was fun. And this brings to the end of this round.
Yeah. Awesome. And this is also the end of the interview, Brie. I have loved this conversation. You have been an amazing guest and I have loved listening to you, and I feel inspired by your philosophies and the way that you said how you deal with challenges or how you exert extreme ownership on whatever good or bad things happen to you. It has been really inspiring to hear from you.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you for saying that. It's always a joy for me to share a little bit of my journey and story. And if anyone picks any nuggets from it, I'm very, very thankful to get to share.
Love this. And one final thing, where would you like to send the listeners of this podcast to learn more about you and how to work with you?
Great question. Probably the most active place is LinkedIn. That's where you'll see a lot of my work being posted, and it's a great place to like also reach out and direct message me if you're interested in getting connected. So yeah, LinkedIn.
All right. Yeah, we'll link your LinkedIn in the show notes and listeners can find you there.
Sounds great. Thank you all for having me.